pick up, and so I did those pretty quickly, took the items back to the trunk of the car and left them there, and spent the rest of the time walking around. Ontario Mills is one of those nice places that it's a circle. You could just kind of make a big circle around it and get quite a few steps in, and every time I take steps, it's recorded on my Fitbit, and it adds up the longer you go. So I was walking around and taking opportunity and getting it there, and it finally got to the point, 10,000 steps, and all the fireworks go off, and it celebrated, and I got to do that. Of course, once you've reached your goal, you can quit walking. And so I was kind of standing around and kind of just wondering what to do while the rest of the family was finishing up their shopping. And I was standing by one of those stands where you can put money in and then you get out a cart that you can put children in and shop with, and they have bags that you can put your stuff in underneath. And this is what I saw. And it struck me. Here's the cart with a bag underneath that says, "Do not put child in bag." Why would you put a child in a bag? They got a seat up top with a belt on it. Evidently, some people need words of wisdom. That when they rent one of these things, that's not where you put your child. Do not put your children in the bag. Put them in the seat. Strap them in. It's kind of like what I've seen every time I fly. And it says, fasten seat belt while seated. Have you ever tried to fasten your seat belt without seating? It's obvious to me. But they have to write it down. Sometimes there are things in this world and times in this world when we need to be reminded of some basic, very important principles and how we do it. Proverbs is one of those books that has this collection of information that can keep us straight, and it has these quick pointers that begin to teach us something very succinctly. And our focus today is on Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 21. It's very simple, very straightforward. I'm reading from the English Standard Version. Whoever despises his neighbor is a sinner. Now, I want to stop there. Because what is being said is this, and if I were to paraphrase it, if you don't treat your neighbor right, if you disrespect your neighbor, you're going to go to a hot place and burn. That's really what it's saying. When it identifies you as a sinner, that's what takes place. Very straightforward. You are rotten to your neighbors, hot place. That's where you're going. Now it turns around, because then the question is, we always try and do this. Children do it all the time. They want to know exactly where's the boundary, how far can I go with it. And so the question is then, who is my neighbor? And the proverb begins to give us a hint as to who the neighbor is, because it says right after this, but blessed is he who is generous to the poor. So we get an idea of who our neighbor is if we're generous to the poor, but the story becomes clearer, the principles become clearer if we turn to the Bible and we look at a story and an experience that Jesus had. It's recorded in Luke chapter 10 and verse 25. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. You're familiar with that story. The Good Samaritan comes up to Jesus and he asks him the question, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus knew this was a smart man. He was a lawyer. And he turns right the question back to him and he says, "Well, what's your understanding of what that's all about?" And this is what the lawyer says, quoting scripture, quoting words, even Jesus has said the same thing. We'll look at that a little later, but this is what he said. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." Smarty Pants lawyer decided that he needed a follow-up question because that was too easy an answer. And Jesus outsmarted him. So then he comes back with the question, "Okay, who is my neighbor?" And Jesus tells a story. It's a story, the Good Samaritan. Here is a man who is traveling, and as he's traveling, he is set upon by thieves and robbers who beat him up, and they take all of his stuff, and they leave him there on the side of the road, ready to die, and he's not able to help himself. He's there, he's helpless in the whole process. Three people walk by. One of the three, the third one, stops. Instead of passing by, going as far away as he possibly can. And I understand that. There are times when we think they're traps. So we need to be careful. Don't get involved. It's a trap. Something bad is going to happen. If you talk to strangers, you might find yourself in trouble. Don't talk to strangers. We do all kinds of things that we teach each other socially in terms of what takes place, and it's difficult to know. We don't think of that in the United States. Other parts of the world think of it much more readily. Some years ago, when I was living in Maryland, a friend of our family came from the Middle East. And he came to Washington, D.C. area, and my father said to me, would you please take him up to Columbia, to the offices up there, where he's going to have an interview, and if you could take him up, I'd appreciate it. So I said, yeah. I said, oh, fine. Put him in my car, and we drove up Route 29 between Tacoma Park, Silver Spring, Maryland, and Columbia, Maryland. Route 29 goes up the way there. There's a point at which, if you know the highway, it comes down a hill, and on either side, it's pretty sharp and woods covered in wooded area. And then you come to a bridge, and then it goes across this rocky gorge, and then it starts up the other side again with these steep hills and covered in trees and so forth. And he turned to me, he said, do you ever have trouble with pirates? What he meant was bandits. And I said, oh, bandits. No, we have no trouble. And then it struck me. This was a man who, because of the conditions in the country where he came from, had been driving his car, minding his own business. Somebody walked up to him, put a gun at his head and said, get out, and took his car. And he had no recourse. No police to go to, nobody to complain to. His car was gone. He's used to being in that kind of a situation where you have to be cautious about what's taking care around you, place around you. You want to be careful with that whole process. And so he comes up. We don't think about that much. I guess what I'm trying to do is to say we become accusatory towards those two who passed by. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they thought it was a trap. And the robbers would now beat them up as they did that man if they stepped closer. The Good Samaritan, this man, this Samaritan, this his heart was moved when he saw the man there, and he comes along and he gives him some treatment. He binds up his wounds. He cleans him up. He puts him on his donkey or whatever animal he had there, and he takes him to an inn, and he pays money to the innkeeper to take care of the man so that he can get his strength back and everything should be done. Having finished telling the story, Jesus simply says to this lawyer, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? I don't know if you've thought about that. Because we're asking the question, who is my neighbor? And we usually think that the good person is the neighbor, is the one who's there, and the neighbor is the person we help. Jesus does a little twist on this if you look carefully at the story. The robber was the one that fell among thieves. I mean, the man who was robbed was the one who fell among the thieves. He had the neighbor in the Good Samaritan who stopped to help him. It's a little twist. It's subtle. The man answered correctly. He said, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. Now, I know you're familiar with this, but what you may have missed in the whole point of who is my neighbor and how we treat other people, it is an answer to the question, how do I know I can have eternal life? It is a question of our salvation. It's not just a being politically correct, socially appropriate. It is a matter of your theology and what you understand about God and future life and life eternity, bound up in the reality of how we treat those around us. That's a powerful way to deal with it. It goes a little bit further. Come with me to the book of Matthew, chapter 22, and there you find that there is an experience in verse 38. This again was a quote, a very similar, but quoting the Old Testament. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, there we go again, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him, Jesus. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. The reason I say that and come back, and when we look at what is most important and how sometimes we get caught up in some of the itty-bitty things down the line. I'm if you happen to have it on the back of your car and around the license plate of your car, that's good for you. That's fine. I couldn't do it myself. But I go around, I see them in Loma Linda particularly quite a bit. It goes, the seventh day is still the Sabbath. And I realize it's we're trying to be a witness. But sometimes it comes across as being very arrogant. I'm right and you're wrong. How are we treating the people around us? How do we interact in a way that is appropriate, that is consistent with whom Jesus is and how he moves and what he does? John chapter 15. Jesus was speaking again, verses 12 and 13, where he says that little phrase you're familiar with, greater love has no man than he would lay down his life for another. What Jesus is talking about is the very thing that he did in his own life, where he, the Son of God, God himself, came down, took on the form of man, was crucified on the cross. He gave his life, John 3:16 is familiar to us. This issue of how we treat others is an issue of our salvation. Jesus teaching about the final days of this earth and what was going to happen and finally gets to the final judgment. You think we would want to know when we believe that there is a judgment coming? And we are going to have to be facing the great thing. What is the question that the great judge is going to be asking us? And how are we going to respond to that? We find the answer to it in Matthew chapter 25. It's the scene of the final judgment. And Jesus begins to describe it in terminology. He says the separation of the sheep and the goats. And everybody knew sheep were the good creatures. Goats were the animals that they're not as good. And so here we have that kind of a separation that's taking place. Notice what happens. The king will say, verse 34, Matthew 25, the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger? And so on. And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And to emphasize it, he then goes through the goats and has the exact same question, and they did not do what they needed to do, and therefore the answer was very clear. What I am pointing out this morning is that when it comes to the final judgment, they are not going to be asking you, can you explain the 2300-day prophecy? Can you explain the Franks and the Vithikos and what the relationship is between them? The question is, how have you been treating others? It's a powerful lesson. Causes one to stop. Proverbs is like a cliff note. It cuts to the chase. It gets to the point. God is looking for each of us to be generous and helpful to those around us. Currently in the United States, there is a discussion, as there are in other parts of the world, concerning immigration. That's a part of it. Part of it is also the matter that there are refugees who are trying to escape some terrible situations and trying to find another place where they can have a better life. The discussion of those principles and ideas came up on Facebook and has been there for the last few years, especially this last year. And people are expressing their opinions rather strongly. The debate has gone and people make their comments. What has shocked me is the number of people whom I consider my friends and whom I have known fairly well, and I do not understand how they realize I don't know them at all. Because their attitude is, when it comes to this matter of immigration, absolutely not. We need to take care of our own first. We need to make sure that myself and my family and those that I care for are all cared for. And the rest of you, until that has happened and I'm satisfied with it, you can go back to wherever you came from. I don't want any part of it. And when somebody stops and comments in those threads and says, but what about the Christian principle of caring for? They wiggle and they get more angry and more vociferous in their responses. And then it becomes a personal attack on the individual. I'm not wanting to talk about politics, the law, or government. I don't even care about Facebook. But I am asking, when it comes to this question of how you treat others according to biblical standards, I am not concerned with government. I am concerned with biblical standards. When God speaks to us and He gives us clear information, the question we need to ask is, how do we measure up? How do we behave in view of our professed relationship with God? Jesus loved so much that He laid down His life for us. And in response, we allow His Spirit to dwell in us, and our actions will reveal His presence in us. What are we experiencing in life each day? Sometimes we learn from our children. Some years ago, our youngest son moved to the area 9.5 years ago. And when he moved to the area, they rented a house in a nice neighborhood, and this cat came around and adopted them. It just kept hanging. And of course, they knew it was hungry, so they fed it. And the cat had no reason to go and move on anywhere else. Stayed right there. It was kind of a matted cat. It's a Maine Coon, if you know cats. And it was this just matted mass of hair, and it was thick, and it was really ugly looking. It had clearly been in a fight. There was a little mark out of one of its ears and so forth. So my son took the cat to the vet, had it shaved and checked to make sure it was okay, and you know, to know how to deal with it. If they're going to have them accept this adoption, they'd better know what they were dealing with. And so they did. And they named it a very appropriate name. They called it Meow. Because that's what she did all the time. She wanted something, she came up, meow, meow, how are you today, meow? And she would, you'd carry on a conversation with this little cat. They moved, took the cat with them. Cat didn't go anywhere else, didn't try and adopt anybody else, didn't try and leave them, stayed right there with them. Even one time, they would go for a walk. They live in Redlands, and they would walk up to the Olive Market. You know where some of you know where that is on there. And they would walk, and this cat, they live a few blocks away, the cat would follow them almost all the way up to the Olive Market, and then it would hide in bushes, and when they came walking back, it would come back and walk back with them. One day, they went walking, the cat went with them, and they were almost close to the Olive Market, and the cat hid. When they came back, the cat didn't follow them, so they went calling around. You can imagine going through the neighborhood, meow, 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 meow. But they did. Meow didn't come out. So they posted on Craigslist a picture of the cat and said, missing cat, has anybody seen this thing? About 3 weeks later, after the cat was gone, they get a phone call from a lady who lived down towards Palm Springs. She said, well, I happened to be in Redlands, and I saw this stray cat that was out there, and I thought I'd better rescue it, so I took it in, and I have it down here with me, and we finally got the cat back. Meow was back. So, for the last 9.5 years, they've had the cat, till a couple of weeks ago. They came out, and there was a little bit of fur in the front yard and a little bit of internal organs and no cat. The neighbors reported that a coyote had been coming around. So they were pretty certain that the coyote had gotten meow. They've been mourning it. Nice cat. I don't like cats. That one I liked. And she, they were going around. And anyway, my 10-year-old granddaughter said that she thought she had seen the coyote in the neighborhood a few times. This week, she and her dad were getting in the truck one evening to go and get some groceries from the grocery store. And Caroline said, I wonder if I'll see the coyote. To which my son said, if I had a gun, I'd shoot it. And my granddaughter started crying. She said, Daddy, you can't do that. The coyote wasn't trying to be mean. The coyote was hungry and was doing what coyotes do, finding food. You can't blame the coyote. I know it's a coyote. Not a human. But sometimes our response to others is similar. We have judgments about people. The way they look, the way they smell, the way they talk, the way they act. And my question is, is that any reason to despise them? The Bible would tell us we need to not despise anyone, but we need to be generous to all. I want to invite you to just think about in your own life, in your own sphere, how you live your life and meet up to the biblical standards.